All right.
Okay, well, we're back on the broadcast and the recording, so we'll turn it over to Otter Tail. We'll get right to it.
Excellent. So let me know who to send the thank you note to for getting the sweet second. I appreciate that.
Send it to Abby.
Thank you, Abby. Mark Toma, Manager of Environmental Services with Otter Tail Power Company. Maybe I'll just quickly introduce the folks at the table here with me. On my right, Brad Zimmerman. He's plant manager of the Coyote Station. So certainly any questions or discussions on building block one and heat rate improvements, we've got a great expert here. Tom Browse, Vice President of Administration, and Brad Tollerson, Vice President of Planning and Strategy. So I've got a number of slides, and I'm going to quickly go through those and skip some that Abby's already well covered. I think one is an exact duplicate, so we must have had great minds thinking alike on that one. Otter Tail Power Company, we cover a three-state territory, North Dakota, 44% of our customers. Minnesota represents about 47%, and South Dakota 9%. We're somewhat unique, and we actually operate coal plants in each of the three states. Coyote Station here near Beulah, Big Stone Plant near Big Stone City, South Dakota, and then the Hoot Lake Power Plant in Minnesota. Those three plants represent about 540 megawatts of our ownership shares on a capacity basis. Hoot Lake Plant, it's a two-unit facility and roughly 140 megawatts. We plan to retire that unit in the 2020 timeframe. And so certainly it's critical for us to rely upon Coyote Station and Big Stone Plant as our baseload resources as we go ahead into the future. We've added significant amounts of wind in the past 10 years or so, basically all of it located in North Dakota, represented on that diagram there. Langdon Wind Energy Center, Laverne, and facilities at Ashtabula. We also own about 100 megawatts of capacity of oil and gas resources, mostly exist for capacity and not so much for energy. You know, the major project that Otter Tail is focused on at this time is the Big Stone Plant Air Quality Control System. As Abby mentioned, we're retrofitting that unit to comply with EPA's regional haze rule, as well will comply with the mercury and air toxic standards regulation. We'll be adding a dry scrubber, SCR for NOx control, a new bag house, as well as injecting activated carbon for mercury reduction. The project construction is it's over 60% complete as we speak. We're on track for our summer 2015 startup, and we have a very excellent safety record going on that project. Another big success story on that is the original budget of $491 million has been reduced to $384 million at this time. That's a very, very busy site. If you drive by there, there's approximately 425 workers on site. And you can see all the construction going on. It almost looks like you're building another power plant there. You know, as we looked at the Clean Power Plan, and I'm not going to get into all the basics. Abby did a good job covering those. You know, a couple of the headlines that we saw there was that, first of all, it stuck out as EPA came up with all these state-by-state targets. So in our mind, what did that mean? You know, also we saw this headline that EPA said this rule is going to achieve a 30% reduction from 2005 levels, and that was kind of the main headline everyone saw at the time. And, you know, our initial thought was, well, we need to dig in the rule some more, but we also felt pretty good from that, just looking at the headline. If we look, you know, at Otter Tail's, our system average intensity, which includes our ownership share of our resources plus our long-term wind PPAs, from 2005 to about 2021, due to wind additions, retiring Hoot Lake Plant, we're projecting a roughly 24% decrease in intensity and about a 19% reduction in mass. So
what's your growth percentage at Otter Tail?
It's pretty small. It's 1-2%, really.
And that's how far out can you? You guys aren't having the numbers MDU has, right? Not even close.
We haven't seen that.
So the growth is just people using more power, not a whole bunch of new services.
Certainly, we quickly learned although we are making drastic reductions on a system-wide basis, that's not how EPA wrote the rule. They wrote the rule coming up with these four building blocks that they applied on a state-by-state basis. And so they drew the boundaries on the states, as we've all talked about. And the year 2005 is truly just a PR talking point. More than anything, they looked at the year 2012 and then applied these building blocks to go down. And 2005 was just a calculation of the reductions that would be achieved by this rule. I highlighted building block two there because, again, that's the block that is the most impactful to Otter Tail. And it's also the key difference in the state targets between North Dakota, South Dakota, and Minnesota. If you just looked at building blocks one, you know, EPA expects a 6% heat rate improvement in all the plants in North Dakota, South Dakota, and Minnesota. They expect all three states to achieve a 15% renewable energy target. They expect all three states to have this 1.5% savings in demand-side energy efficiency. But this block two, this redispatch of combined cycle, all depends whether or not you have combined cycle in your state. So again, that's the one where you end up seeing this wide difference in the state targets and the reductions that need to be achieved. This slide just kind of, again, highlights the three different goals and the different percent reductions that EPA is asking of the three states. So the 11% reduction in North Dakota, you know, ultimately there's some questions about wind and others, where is it truly 11%? Is it more? But this is how, if you take this right from EPA's spreadsheet that they supplied to the docket, these are the percentages that you come up with. Minnesota's reduction is 41%, and South Dakota's a 35% reduction, although the South Dakota goal is the most stringent at 741 pounds per megawatt hour. So again, that's our high level, you know, understanding of the rule. I'll quickly go through our concerns with each of the building blocks and then highlight the differences in how those building blocks affect the three states.
Is there any goal for any gain? I should have asked this damn to you, but once again, we don't have Montana over here or Wyoming. I mean, have you thought at all about if we do regional plans, including Montana and Wyoming, or does it really have to be where you have generation?
Yeah, I just included these three states. That's where our generation is located. Yep. But, you know, under a multi-state plan, you know, there's obviously never going to be a perfect fit where, you know, our resources are going to match up with basin's resources. So there is a natural misalignment there. I have a broader slide as far as the percent reductions that I didn't include in my presentation here. I believe Wyoming's a 19% target, and MDU probably's got the number right off the top of their head is what the percent is. But, you know, you've got this, that's one of the hurdles that we face with this rule, is these differences in the percent reductions, and how do you make that work in a multi-state plan?
I think Abby made this point, but I want to see if I understand it. So since Deer Creek is in a different power pool and a different owner, it's probably unrealistic to think that you're just going to be able to use it. If you did build a combined cycle gas plant in South Dakota in order to take up the lost power from Big Stone, that would actually move you in the wrong direction, because both the case with Minnesota and South Dakota, the goal is less than the 1,100 pounds per megawatt. Is that correct?
That's correct. Your new combined cycle, I think, typically averages maybe 900 to 1,000. The new source limit is 1,100 there. But our understanding of the rule is that a state at its discretion can decide whether or not to count new natural gas combined cycle towards compliance with the 111D target. And in a case like South Dakota with a 741 pounds per megawatt hour target, you would not want to count that because it would move you in the wrong direction. So,
unless they were part of a multi-state unit where the other states wanted to be able to, then...
Correct.
Can you say that again? A new unit, you can decide whether you're going to count it towards this or not? So there could be a bunch of new units built that aren't even part of this plan?
That aren't counted towards, yeah.
As long as they meet the...
Yep, they still have to meet the new source limit.
New source limits.
Correct me if you heard anything differently, Dave, but that's what I've heard from the couple of times I've asked that question of EPA, is that they're basically leaving up to a state's discretion whether or not to include new units in an existing source compliance plan.
But if they're part of a partnership with us, North Dakota would logically want to have it counted.
Yep. Correct.
Can they be counted in one state and not another?
Well, under the single state plan, but if you're in a multi-state plan, I think you'd have to have a consistent approach to that. But I like the outside the box thinking. So building block one, not going to go into a lot of detail. Abby had a lot of the same information up there. EPA is assuming the 6% efficiency improvements that can be made at your power plants, 2% through plant upgrades, and 4% through best operating practices. And, you know, if you ever want to get a plant manager excited like Brad, suggest to him that he can make a 6% improvement in efficiency. Or ask him, you know, what can you do there? And
I would suggest I wasn't doing my job.
You know, yeah, exactly. Coyote has a proud history of using these best practices. This is just an example graph of Coyote Station's net plant heat rate history since the year 2000, and you can see it's been a steady decline. And if you went back further, I think we'd see more of that. So Coyote has done these large projects. Coyote uses best operating practices. So to suggest that another 6% is achievable just is not correct. You know, Dave kind of asked the question, you know, what should be the baseline? You know, really, if you're going to do it right, is you should look at it on a case-by-case basis and, you know, compare it to maybe what EPA suggested there. Knowing that's going to be difficult, EPA is going to want maybe a year to pick. You know, the earlier the better. I mean, these projects have been made throughout time, and so it's hard. You know, what year might work for Kyle Station likely is not going to work for Heskett. So,
and so can you kind of go through these four that make up the 2%, or since they lay them out in more detail than the other 4%? Are those more realistic? Although it seems to me you just got a new turbine a few years ago, didn't you?
Right. Yeah, I don't think we'd disagree with the 2% improvement can be made, but we've made that improvement already.
So these things you've already done?
To a large degree. Some of them are maintenance-type items where, you know, you do them in 1 year, and year six they might have deteriorated. You redo them. Air heater improvements, sealant pump replacements, things like that. On a larger time frame, you could talk about boiler tubes, to a small degree. Sorry, I didn't want to be heard that much. VFDs and fan improvements, we've done a lot of those. We're doing another large project this fall. I did a, you know, as a comparison for, you know, what might be good for one plant may not be for another. I did a back of the envelope, and if you went back to 2003, we did a digital control system and two turbine rotors in 2003 and 2009. And we could have achieved that 6%. It would have been larger than 6%. However, they've been done, and at this stage, we can't count them.
Yes, that'll teach you to be state of the art.
Yeah, that's right. Don't get ahead of the game.
So just our summary positions there are stated there. The other key item that Abby mentioned was when we start thinking about Big Stone Plant, all that new pollution control equipment is going to add a significant amount of station service. So, you know, even in North Dakota, as plants are adding that pollution control equipment to comply with other EPA rules, that negatively impacts heat rate. You know, we're talking nearly 8 megawatts of station service at Big Stone Plant. So, you know, certainly one of our comments will be that EPA needs to, you know, allow for some offsets or adjustments and these decreases the heat rates when you have to comply with other EPA rules. It only seems logical. Building block two, this is the big one. This is the big reason why you see this huge difference in percent reductions amongst the three states. And I've put some actual numbers on the slides that allude to this. You know, basically in Minnesota, combined cycle average of 24% capacity factor in 2012. North Dakota had zero combined cycle, and South Dakota, Deer Creek Station, was under construction, had that 1% capacity factor. So you turn those capacity factors into a 70%, you correspondingly back down, again, as EPA envisions, the coal-fired generation in the state, and you see a 67% reduction in South Dakota and over 50% in Minnesota. And North Dakota is not affected because there is no combined cycle to be utilized in this building block. Obviously, the huge concern there is, again, South Dakota is very unique. Big Stone Plant is the only effective coal plant in the state. And Deer Creek Station is the only combined cycle plant that's going to be affected under this rulemaking. So, you know, EPA talks generally how this rule can impact states. Here's some very specific, unique circumstances. And so we believe that clearly this building block doesn't work, and there's some technical reasons why it needs to be fixed. That 23% capacity factor, Big Stone Plant, in the next slide, Abby alluded to this, but essentially since the minimum operating load of Big Stone Plant is approximately 40% of our max output, you know, that unit needs to be, it would have to be offline at least half of the year. And so really you're talking about building a replacement unit because our customers depend on the energy all 12 months of the year from that unit. The unit operates within MISO, you know, completely different than Deer Creek Station. That unit was built to serve the member needs of Basin Electric, you know, not the customers of Otter Tail, MDU, and Northwestern Energy. And Deer Creek currently operates in the integrated system and will join the SPP market in 2015. Redispatch potentially could be achievable under some circumstances. You could accomplish that by having to add that economic penalty factor, you know, in order to accomplish that redispatch. But none of these conditions that may work for redispatch apply to South Dakota. No contractual relationship, serve unique loads, no firm transmission rights exist, and are committed and dispatched by two separate entities with unique commitment and dispatch processes. So truly this block is technically infeasible. It should not be applied at all to South Dakota. You know, will EPA listen to this or not? Even if they don't, we still have this huge issue that if redispatch were possible, that building block was flawed by Deer Creek not beginning operation until late 2012 with this unrepresentative 1% capacity factor. If Deer Creek had been treated as an under construction unit, the target for South Dakota would be substantially different. Depending on some assumptions you make, that 740 pounds per megawatt hour would be changed to something like 970 if they were just simply to consider that an under construction unit. So that has a very large impact there. You know, and again, the main talking point here is, you know, Big Stone Plant's investing $400 million. Otter Tail share is roughly half of that to comply with another EPA rule. You absolutely cannot jeopardize this investment by another, you know, competing EPA regulation.
Would you go through again what the impact would be if Deer Creek were treated as a under construction unit?
So under construction units, the way EPA defined them is they looked at those as units that essentially began operation in 2013 or began construction prior to January 8th of 2014, which was the new source rule. What we're asking them to do is they need to apply that to Deer Creek Station because during 2012 it clearly was hardly operational. And so if they treat it as an under construction unit, EPA essentially assumes a default 55% capacity factor to that unit, such that only 15% is redispatched. It changes nothing with how Deer Creek will truly be operational, but it changes the formula how it's treated. And so there's a 15% redispatch instead of a 69% redispatch. So that 740 pounds per megawatt hour is then transformed to something more along the lines of 970. So now you're talking about still a 15% reduction is needed in the state of South Dakota under that scenario, but at least now that might give some flexibility to look at some different building blocks, look at some renewable energy additions, look at energy efficiency.
Just that one alone, what does it do to the
Right, you know, the capacity factor of Big Stone changes from 23% to more like a 60% capacity. And we think that, you know, we could use some other building blocks to improve that. But when you have a target as stringent as EPA has proposed, you know, what flexibility is out there to offset that? You know, we would ask that question of EPA because we certainly don't believe there's enough flexibility. You're talking about adding an enormous amount of wind, which, you know, is that even feasible? What does that do to the transmission system?
So it would help in that it would get Big Stone's capacity up to 60% and make that more usable, but it would not get the pounds per megawatt hour goal up to where a gas plant could be added.
It would be about closer to a wash at that point. It wouldn't have a large benefit or a large negative impact at that point. You know, it also gets at that point is now you have a South Dakota on a percent reduction basis, looks a lot more similar to North Dakota. So as you start looking at other like-minded states or other opportunities for multi-state plans, at least now you're getting close to each other. So we believe that it's a clear technical change. You know, we believe it's infeasible. Will EPA recognize that? At least there's a technical change that clearly needs to be made here.
Are you in the schedule at all to get out to see Minnesota?
We have been involved in
their commission, I guess, if you will.
Their commission, we are not specifically on the commission schedule.
Because I'm just thinking that the regulators, South Dakota and us, tend to see things similar. Wyoming for sure, Montana probably so, but Minnesota Commission would be the outlier. I'm just curious, so you must be planning to go see them.
You know, Minnesota has a stakeholder group where they've had some routine calls, and I've been involved in those as well as Excel and Minnesota Power and Great River Energy and others. You know, and I will say that even Building Block 2 for Minnesota concerns that state. They believe it should be more of a 40% redispatch number versus a 70. So from that aspect, they see that issue. Now, they may view the overall benefits of the rule differently than the states of North Dakota and South Dakota, but certainly they understand there's some issues with how the target was calculated for the state of Minnesota as well. You know, Block 3, again, the only thing I'm going to really point out here is EPA calculated the renewable energy targets for the states based off of, they took 15% multiplied by the total amount of generation that was located in the state. So that's how they set the target. They looked at it based off of what was in the state and came up with the target. If EPA changes methodologies on the wind going forward, where if wind follows load or whatnot, you know, they need to recalculate what the renewable energy targets should be for North Dakota. That wind energy needs to come out of the total for the state, come up with a new number. So that is a key thing to keep in mind. The other thing that sticks out for South Dakota, of that 12 million megawatt hours that you see there, 6 million megawatt hours is from hydro generation. Hydro does not count towards compliance at all in this rule. And even though Otter Tail does not have we do not own any of that hydro generation in South Dakota, just by the nature of that being, you know, part of the generation in the state, they take 15%. You end up with actually hydro almost hurting you in the state. They should take that out of the total state generation in calculating the renewable energy targets if they're not going to allow hydro to be used for compliance there. This is the slide that's the exact replica of Abby there. It just shows the differences in the renewable energy regions and the targets that were assigned. Our position on this block just recognizes the fact that the transferability of RECs has been a major topic for discussion. EPA clearly calculated the state goals based on the energy from all generating plants located in the state, staying in the state. So these goals must be recalculated if EPA allows the RECs to move. And another, you know, important point on this is that there needs to be consistency. So if they only allowed renewable energy to move but not fossil generation, there's a pretty large inconsistency. Obviously, North Dakota is a huge exporter of coal generation as well. So in our opinion, that doesn't make any sense to create that inconsistency. Block 4, this is, like Abby, this is the block that I'm least familiar with, and our manager, Kim Peterson of Market Planning, could not be here today. I would be the counterpart to Larry there. So any questions you ask, I'll certainly write them down and take them back. But we'll be able to give you great answers. Just shows that EPA sets up this 1.5% goal. They ramp up to this goal and has varying degrees of that ramp rate, varies from state to state. Since Minnesota is essentially already has an energy efficiency program in place, they actually are required to ramp up to that 1.5% quicker than the North or South Dakota there. But at the end of the day, each state under this block is envisioned to have that 1.5% demand side savings goal.
But Ottertail's been, I mean, all the investor owns work at it, but you guys have been, I think, very successful on demand side management for 30 years.
Actually, so, in 2012, Ottertail achieved 1.5% savings in Minnesota and roughly 1% in South Dakota.
There's no way to credit the past for the future, if you will, the same scenario. But that argument that you picked a lot of the low-hanging fruit for this stuff is maybe a little bit different for you than some of the other companies.
Yeah, absolutely. We've already doing this now. Our understanding is, you know, if we continue those programs, they will be credited. Does it need to be federally enforceable? That's the other question. You know, South Dakota is not enforceable. Certainly in North Dakota, you know, if we were just given a rate and say Ottertail meet this rate, we couldn't do it. You know, based off of our experiences with energy efficiency in the other two states, you know, we potentially may want to look at that because we have some experience in achieving energy efficiency here. So it's one of those, again, where it doesn't need to be a federally enforceable kind of situation in order for us to take credit for it.
What are your costs for those programs? Have you calculated that compared to the formula that MDU used?
You know, I've got some rough numbers. In Minnesota, roughly in 2012, it was about 16 cents per kilowatt hour. And South Dakota, it was actually 8 cents in 2012. And that can vary from year to year. But again, South Dakota, we have a little less stringent target than we do in Minnesota. But South Dakota 2013, I have written down that it was actually 17 cents. So you can see that variation in year to year there. And I can't remember what EPA assumed for cost. Was that the 22 cents?
Yeah. Well, that's what they assumed. I don't know.
So. This, again, slide was from our manager of market planning. And at least in her opinion, EPA uses an understandard methodology and approach to determining the energy efficiency goal. But they are aggressive. They cost dollars and resources to achieve. You know, certainly these things just don't take off on their own without a whole group of folks working together. And the I'm glad you asked the question of MDU of what EM&V stand for, evaluation, measurement, and verification, because I believe that's, I understand, a very important piece of how do you measure and verify and quantify. But Ottertail's got a lot of experience in this area. And since Kim's not here, I'd be glad to offer her as a resource for and knowing her, she'd be very glad to do that and lead the discussion based on our experiences there. So, regarding multi-state plans, basically alluded to this already. You know, the wide differences between the targets. You know, we see that as creating a high hurdle to entering into a multi-state collaboration. I agree completely with the commissioners that we should anticipate changes from the proposed rule to the final rule. So, you know, we shouldn't be making a decision today going it alone versus working with other states. I think that the targets could end up looking much more similar at the end of the day. You know, and again, the only difference between North Dakota, Minnesota, and South Dakota was really that building block too. So if EPA chose the let go of that building block and come up with something new, it could, you know, have a much different impact. So we shouldn't make that decision today, but we need to continue to be engaged and appreciate all the work that Dave and Tom and all the Department of Health employees have done engaging with other states. So thank you very much for that.
How do you envision that playing out? Because with other states, because Dave, I think, has a similar problem with your counterparts. I shouldn't say problem, but okay. So all the commissioners get together at some point in time. If we get to a multi-state plan, it'll be South Dakota, North Dakota, Minnesota, and the commissioners don't agree, it's going to fall apart pretty quick. How do you envision your discussions with Minnesota on this? I mean, you talk to them all the time. And we'll ask XL a bunch of these same questions, but what do you anticipate your challenges are going to be in Minnesota?
You know, we are planning to retire our Hoot Lake plant.
We've had a lot of discussion about that in the past.
Yeah, so
you know where we stood on that.
Right. And they certainly have some more challenges with other coal generation in the state. So, you know, I know Minnesota, certainly with the renewable standard that they have in place, you know, they certainly want to be able to take as much credit for that as possible. Certainly the energy efficiency goals, that's something that they've already have in place, and so they'll want to continue that as well. They're struggling, I think, a lot with this block two as well. How do you achieve that? Or is there as ways to offset through other renewable type additions, gas, you know, conversions of the gas potentially, although again we've got a target of 873 pounds per megawatt hour. You know, that's where maybe a new combined cycle plant may run. So unless that target gets bumped up, what will new gas do as well? So
it's hard to speculate, I guess.
Hard to speculate. It's hard to, you know, as much as we'd say, yeah, we love our portfolio.
But do you get a sense that they'll agree with your technical arguments about why some things are good and bad?
Yeah, I do.
Okay.
I do. They've been on board with those technical arguments, and I believe they're accumulating a set of technical points for the state of Minnesota. So certainly to Otter Tail, you know, there's a lot of hurdles to overcome. There are some benefits as far as a time extension, although more time is likely needed for the complexity of that. You know, we've never cited generation based off of, you know, complying with an EPA rule. We've complied with, where does it make sense? Where's your gas? Where's your transmission? Where's your wind? Where's your water? So now you're looking at, boy, if we have to help make some plant, we have to cite wind, and do we have to cite in South Dakota? Or can we not cite a gas plant in South Dakota? Does it have to? Could it only be in North Dakota? So, you know, that's certainly something that, you know, we don't want to be limited to just siting because of this rule. And certainly it would be more synergistic with our utility portfolio. And then really this is just my last slide that, you know, we don't know what's going to happen with South Dakota. If the target didn't change and RECs followed load, you know, it could be critical to somehow figure out how to have North Dakota and South Dakota work together. And it's potentially more the selfish type point there. But, you know, we encourage everyone in this room to focus on this really important time period that runs through October 16th. As far as submitting comments, you know, I think, like most folks in this room, we've spent up to this point just trying to digest this rule, understand it, get clarifications, talk with officials, talk with other utilities, and really now over the next month really be focusing on writing these comments. And it's hard to commit to any date before October 16th to have these ready, but certainly maybe at a minimum we can share draft versions with everyone to kind of get a sense of that. So,
do you have any estimate how many hours you've spent on this? Seriously.
Well, I know what my timesheet says, but that doesn't match the reality of the outside hours of that. It's truly been,
I mean, company wide.
Probably been it's a full time job and then some. So, and then not knowing what's going to change between now and the final rule. We hope it's much different, but okay. We don't want to take that for granted. So,
Dave, do you have any particular questions for Otter Tail?
At this point, I think, you know, it's going to be a challenge in the regional plan. And I kind of get the feeling that each company is going to have their take on it. You know, the nuances of the different plans and how they're going to mesh is going to be interesting. So the sooner we start engaging with my counterparts in South Dakota and Wyoming and Montana and Minnesota, I get a flavor of this.
And I did just separately leave just a couple of slides on our cost replace Big Stone plant, the assumptions that fed into that. Bottom line is, you know, MD came up with around 10% number. We roughly own twice as much as Big Stone plant as MD use. Our numbers came in around 20%. So, I mean, it's a large number on, again, on top of all the other things that are happening at this time. So I'll leave that with you as well.
$200 per year?
Yeah, so that we just kind of translate that 20% into what would that annual rate impact to be to a North Dakota residential customer. It's, you know, in that ballpark.
Okay.
So when MDU was at $10.21 a month, your customers would be at $20 a month to replace that?
Yeah, roughly. Comes in a little bit less than that.
Sure, that makes sense in the rate cases. They usually almost 2-to-1 cost differences for you guys. Okay. Julie? All right. I know we'll never get Excel done in 7 minutes, but I would like to start again at 1 o'clock for those who are interested in coming back. And for Excel, you're right away in a shoot, but let's talk a lot about that whole Minnesota piece, because I think that's going to be critical how we figure out how this play out between air and regulatory stuff. So thank you all.